KPCW News Time now, 8:16. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meets tomorrow starting at 4:30 at the Sheldon Richens Building. On the phone with a rundown of the agenda, I have Summit County Planner Amir Cause. Good morning, Amir.
Good morning.
And I'm not sure whether or not you can skim through some of the items that you're not handling on the agenda itself, but last week, Ray thought New Park would be the bulk of the agenda. Can we talk a little bit about that Preeter Caroon project along Rasmussen Road?
So that one, as far as my in depth my knowledge, how it goes into that one is that they're coming back with some revisions that the Planning Commission requested, and they're going to have a discussion. Obviously, no decisions are being made at this time, but it was just steps, your typical steps in the planning process, with the Planning Commission. So revisions are going to be looked at, and we'll take it from there, based on the direction of the Planning Commission.
Okay. So this project along Rasmussen, it's a mixed-use project, 102 residential units, 40 of those affordable residential in six buildings, 8,200 square feet of commercial. Is the staff recommending a rezone to community commercial since it's now rural residential?
So we're not recommending anything at this time. We're just taking seeking input. So, I mean, that's at best, because I think it's just too preliminary for us to be even making recommendations.
Okay, this is the project that you are handling, though, is the public hearing regarding the commons at the New Park Final Division. This is Matthew Crandall asking for a building with seven market rate units, one affordable unit. It would be up to 43 feet high and over 10,000 square feet. So have we decided if this was...
So, yeah, the use, the last Planning Commission, the use was discussed and the use is allowed. So County Attorney Dave Thomas was there. Just based on the language that the development agreement has written, it does allow the proposed use. So, once that discussion was had at the last meeting, the next things were discussed was the board of design. And the Planning Commission directed staff to, and the applicants to come back with a couple of different options, flipping the project 180, possibly further away from the plaza. The other option was to have underground garages, possibly split parking units. The applicant has come back with a few diagrams and plans on explaining on why not some of these other suggestions will work. So that's kind of the expectation of the meeting is to have a discussion on alternative design. Once the Planning Commission is satisfied with any of those options, the next meeting we would expect to come back with the final design and a possible decision, possible action.
So again, to talk a little bit more about that parking, are they proposing to put in underground parking?
So one of the issues that New Park has had throughout the entirety of its project is groundwater. Groundwater is quite high. Staff's opinion is probably that it won't work, but the applicant will come back at the meeting with further studies to demonstrate why it will or will not work. We don't have a letter other than the diagram. We don't have a letter from the applicant because they stated that they will explain everything in a presentation at the meeting tomorrow.
Also, at the last meeting, some Snyderville Planning Commissioners asked if the applicant could turn the site into a park. My guess is that's not what the applicant wants to do, but is it possible?
They've reached out to the county to see if the county is willing to purchase it. Due to the nature and small size of the parcel, the county just doesn't have the funds right now to purchase it. Just because there's quite a lot of density associated with. With the parcel, typically for the same price, you could go out, get acres and acres of open space, adjacent to trails, and so right now the county has expressed an interest in purchasing it.
All right, the Woodward Gargosa, again, this is done by planner Ray Milner, but the discussion here precedes a public hearing on the project December 12th. Back in October, the Snyderville Planning Commission took a field trip to look at alternative locations for the main building. The staff is recommending that the location stay where the applicant proposed it. How come?
That one, Ray would have to answer. I have not had my hands on that one at all.
Okay, Amir, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. Well, the Park City Board of Education met last week and for the first time ever closed off all of the district schools to get two out-of-district students in the studio to explain. I have the superintendent of schools joining me on the phone. I have business administrator Todd Hauber. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start with that first. Todd, I know you had presented a lot of scenarios to the board about how this could work. Do you need to give us some background, Ember, and just in terms of why the board is
right.
looking
so,
at this?
You know, each year, by law, we have to look at our school capacities. And as we continue to have to build onto our schools and have modulars to deal with our capacity issues, the board took a hard look at our capacity and chose to close all of our schools. And so what that means is that any of our students that are currently on open enrollment, so we have about 150 current students out of our 5,000 that are on an open enrollment. And that also includes our employee students that are out of district. And so what that means is moving forward, those students are allowed to stay in, but moving forward, we are going to deny any open enrollment applications moving forward for this year.
And Todd, how did you come up with the numbers to substantiate that vote?
Sure. So in the statute, the board has the authority to establish what a classroom is, for lack of a more technical term. And so what we did is we went through each of the buildings and reviewed what number of classrooms were being used for grade-level instruction versus classrooms that were being used for special programs, such as STEM programs or music programs or computer labs, et cetera. And the board had the ability to say those special programs are not rooms that we will use for grade-level classes. We want to maintain those offerings within our schools and focus just on the grade room classes for the calculation of open enrollment.
So do you expect the school board's decision to be legally challenged?
You know, there's always that possibility. I don't know if someone will bring that forward and go through that effort. They're welcome to do that. Within the statute, again, the board has that ability to determine what the instructional stations are and what the average class size is for those instructional stations. So it could be an interesting challenge if one comes forward.
Yeah, but we're not going to leave any student who is in hanging here, right? I mean, they're all going to be allowed to continue their education in Park City Schools?
Sure. The discussion on Tuesday actually brought that up. There was a good, healthy discussion as to what should we do with regards to those students. The recommendation that I made to the board had included those students in the calculations for enrollment projections, as well as in the calculations for the maximum capacities of the schools. So I had already assumed that those students would remain within the school system. And the board, in the end, was able to adopt that and move forward with that idea.
And their siblings as well, would they be allowed to join in?
So under the current board policy, that's a consideration that can be made, but there's no guarantee that a sibling would be allowed into a school under open enrollment.
Anyone employed by the Park City School District, however, would be granted some kind of exception?
I believe that is the case, that as part of recruiting and bringing the most talented people into the school district, that there may be a benefit that comes into play. And bringing their children into the district to bring that highly qualified teacher in is one we don't want to turn down.
Yeah. And when we're talking about just 150 students, I mean, I guess if you were to spread it out, that would be five classrooms across all of the schools. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it adds up.
Sure, it adds up. When you look at the counts in the elementary schools, we're talking 10, 15 students in the whole school, maybe one or two, three in a given classroom. So statistically, in the elementary schools, it's almost imperceptible. It's one student here, one student there. In the secondary schools, that's where we have the greater concentration of students. Again, it's more a factor that we only have three secondary schools, so they obviously show up as a higher percentage. But even in those settings, when you're looking at a high school of 1,200 students and you have 40 that are out of boundary students, again, statistically, that's not enough to say that those students are causing us to hire additional staff or build onto the school. So it really is quite small in number.
All right, let's turn on to there was a discussion with regard to next year's school budget that includes the anticipated tax increase that was identified in the current year budget cycle. So what are we looking at in terms of a future tax increase?
So right now, when we were looking at the budgets, we knew that this coming budget cycle, so for the fiscal year 2019 year, that a $3.5 million budget increase would be necessary. That we saw that in advance and had already been preparing for that. We're in the current conversations with our building administrators and with our department heads about what additional needs we may have for the upcoming school year as well. And I presented a round number, about $3.4 million of additional services and staffing that we would need for the upcoming year. That's all under discussions right now. We'll see where that number actually lands in the next couple of weeks.
So that's about $7 million total then, right?
Correct. When you add that together, it becomes about a little over $7 million number.
Okay. And then can you give us an idea of what that looks like on a home, an average price home?
So it's a number roughly right now using current assessed valuation. It's probably under $200 in total impact.
Okay, for a home that's about $800,000?
A home that's at $650,000.
Okay. All right, so when does this, this really doesn't happen until like next spring, right?
That's correct. The board has asked us to advance our budget cycle. So we're making, holding meetings and making decisions that we'd normally be holding in February and in March. We're advancing that into December and January so that we can get ahead of the hiring cycles that happen in the state for teachers and administrators. We just want to make sure we have a good locked-in budget so that we can hire the best staff.
All right. And then also, you're down at the state legislature today. What's going on there?
So the Interim Committee for Revenue and Taxation is meeting today. And over the summer, there was a work group that had been organized to address several different tax issues, several of them having to do with property taxes. So I've been involved with those discussions, trying to determine how to improve the calculations for new growth, how to advance the cycle for when dollars are made available to the schools in the budgeting process. And Senator Stevenson is putting together a major tax reform bill that he's calling an omnibus bill that includes property tax increases as well. So we're here watching that and seeing how it progresses.
Right. And we've heard that there may have been the equalization bill that was like filed the last day of the state legislature earlier this year, but last session, may be back again at the start of this next year's session, huh?
Correct. That's what we're already hearing from Senator Fillmore. He's talked about having a bill ready for the beginning of the session. That one focuses on how those equalized dollars would be distributed across the school districts. We've not seen that language yet, so we're not sure exactly how he's planning to accomplish that. The Senator Stevenson bill that's going to be introduced this morning is actually the funding side of that equalization. So he's identifying where the additional dollars will come from in order to have them equalized through a Senator Fillmore-type bill.
Okay. We'll check back with you on that and see what happens then. Todd, anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, thanks for letting me share a little bit today.
Okay. Hey, thanks. School District Business Administrator Todd Halber there. Also in the studio with me, the Superintendent of Schools, Amber Conley. Board also last week approved the appointment of Aaron Grady to serve as Julie Eihausen's replacement. How come that doesn't happen until February, now that you've got her named?
Right. So when Julie submitted her resignation, she specifically stated that she was going to stay on until February.
She could leave if she wanted, though? I mean, now that you've got somebody.
Now that we have an appointment, theoretically, yes, she could. However, you know, I think that she's very dedicated to continuing finishing out her term or her what she said that until she was going to resign.
Sure, especially with all the budget discussions so coming up earlier this year.
We are. We're in the middle. We have moved up our budget cycle of about 2 months in an effort to be able to recruit more teachers earlier.
Yeah. So will Aaron be available then to come sit through all of that?
Absolutely. And our goal is to be able, we reached out just first of all congratulating her, but we want to be able to pull her in and start the learning process. It's to be a governing board member is sometimes a very thankless job, but it is a massive learning opportunity for someone.
Right. Is she able then to sit through closed sessions if she's not?
She is not. Until she takes the oath of office, she's not able to be part of closed session. But we definitely want to get her up to speed with our policies and procedures.
All right. Last week, you also reported that the administration has reviewed protocols and policies related to the district's emergency plan, given all that we have seen happen in this world. What kind of changes should we expect to see, if any?
First of all, we've made huge strides in continuing to improve our safety, and I think that this was definitely a wake-up call and a good one. So some of the changes that you can see physically in our schools is we are changing our front offices, our vestibules, so when you walk in, being able to go into the secretary's office, point of contact, sign in. So we're doing a visitor management system district-wide. You will need your ID, some type of state-issued ID or a country-issued ID to log in. And it's a great way to look at our number of volunteers and our visitors that are coming into our schools. The next thing that we're doing is we're looking at an emergency response system, be able to do immediate notifications out to our staff and our students and our parents. I think when you have one of these situations, it is a really scary time for a parent. And it is our responsibility at that point to always be working with the situation at hand with our staff and students. And so looking at a quicker alert system for our parents to get information out. So we're really excited. We actually have a company through Bissam-Salem, Atlas RTX, that we've been working with the school district, and it's the PCSD chat. But we are going to be testing our systems. We are going to do a district-wide safety drill before our Christmas break. And so I believe we have it set for December the 13th. I'll have to double-check, but I'll make sure and let everyone know that it's definitely a drill. But the thing that we learned 2 years ago was if one school on the Kearns campus locks down, all of them need to lock down because of the close proximity. And so that's something that worked really, really well this time. So we're getting better, but we still have ways to improve.
All right. The board also approved a contract for a collaborative learning network. This is going to kick the master planning process off, come January?
Right. So we have a consultant coming in. He'll be in the first week of December. His name is Nick Salmon, and he has a vast experience. And so what he's going to help the board do is set up the process so it's transparent, so it's communicated well out to the public. And we are going to be sharing that information and reaching out to our communities and our staff.
Okay. I got to ask you, I noticed the letter to the editor by your significant other, Ari Ioannidis, in the Park Record Saturday. Can you give us some background on that? I mean, Ari praises your accolades. He says he believes that this is the best executive team in district history, and he thanked those who have called and messaged you with their support. But he also says that you come under attack. Who's attacking you, and what are they saying?
You know, when you deal with 10,000 parents because of our 5,000 students and you have a community of about 22,000, you certainly aren't going to be able to make everyone happy. And unfortunately, there seems to be a constituency out there that unfortunately won't meet me at the table. And so from the very beginning of when I came to Park City, we really believed that we had a good school district, and we wanted to make it great. And as we looked at the many resources we have through our community alliances and our partnerships, we also knew that the morale of the school district staff was very low. So if you recall, they had just come out of federal mediation of some really ugly negotiations. And so I started the work around what can we do to improve our culture. And culture in a school district is an interesting beast. And so we've taken very specific measures, first of all, in measuring school culture, because we know if there's a positive school culture, our students are learning at higher levels. And so we've this is our second survey that we've done district-wide with all of our staff. And so there were over 900 comments that we received, and we very specifically asked what's going well and what needs improved. And again, our goal is to retain and recruit our very best personnel and hold our leadership accountable. And so as we've done this, we have some involved parents that served in 2015 on a subcommittee for the teacher survey. And so there was an individual that came to public comment, and I'm going to say personally attacked me for some of the actions that were taken, even after reaching out to this individual several times in the past. And so, unfortunately, it's caused some divisiveness with our community. And again, we go back to what are we here for? And we're here for our students. And we're here to make sure that we're providing the very best education for them. And as we going back to the specific culture survey, this is an effort to continually improve. This isn't a one and done. And it's an opportunity for us to have some conversations and some starting points for that. So at the district level, we're reviewing our results and starting to implement the changes for improvement. And I would say that we've had, you look back at the morale, we've had two very successful negotiations, the last two. We have, you know, out of our 600-plus staff members, I'm going to say 90% of them are pleased. We definitely have areas to improve. We need to look at our subs and improve the pay for our subs. We need to be able to pay our custodians more and recruit bus drivers. And we're looking at other districts to be able to learn from them. But I guess in the end, it comes back to that what I'm asking as a leader is, you know, to meet me at the table and be problem solvers rather than just problem finders, because we can all be problem finders.
Sure. So the attacks are coming from parents as opposed to teachers? Is that what you're
right.
telling me?
And right now, unfortunately, there's been about two or three parents that I'm very aware of that are very unhappy. And I would say I could even probably pinpoint to where this has happened. But I would ask the community to maybe look at what our actual data is and look at our metrics going from an 89% graduation rate to a 97% graduation rate, looking at our ELL improvement scores where we had 11% proficiency, and our 8th and 9th and 10th grade students, our Hispanic students, have made significant strides. For instance, our 11th graders are now up to 39% proficiency. That's still not okay, but we've made some incredible strides. And I'm going to say that we have, as far as an administrative team, we are cohesive and moving towards what's best for kids.
So did Ari tell you he was writing this?
You know, I actually, you and I are friends on Facebook. After the school board meeting on Tuesday night, I would say that as a leader, you know, you do have thick skin, but I was discouraged.
Okay. So you did. He saw how upset you were then.
Well, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you have a position in a community that you believe in, that you have put so much time and energy into. And as a leader, I can say, you know, I've made mistakes and I continue to grow. But I continue to believe in what we're doing because it's good for kids. And we're a role model for the rest of Utah and the nation for what we're doing around mental health. And so I had posted, you know what, I've always been transparent, I've been accessible. And so I reached out to my staff Wednesday morning and I sent an email and I said, if there is something that you need to tell me, I'll come to you and we can talk about this. I have open office hours, I, you know, have staff meetings, I meet with my principals regularly. And I reached out to my friends and I said, is there something I'm really missing? Have I totally missed the boat on this? There was definitely some emotion in that letter. So thank you for asking. I continue to remain steadfast for what's good for kids in our district. I feel for the first time that we hopefully have some stability within the board. Having four presidents in a year has been challenging. And we're in the mode of continual improvement.
Okay, I need to leave it there. Amber, thanks for your time. Joining me now in the studio with a monthly real estate update, I have Board President-elect Todd Anderson, along with Russ Smith. He's with Real Advantage Title Insurance. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Todd, let's start with you. Maybe just a quick overview of what we're seeing out there as more people come to town. Does that mean things starting to pick up a bit?
Not necessarily. You know, we kind of go into our lull times, our busiest quarters of the second and third, with usually the first quarter of sales actually being our lowest number. And we kind of see things move that way right now, and that we're seeing some of our lowest inventory levels that we've seen in years. People get to a spot and say, well, it didn't sell over the summer, I'm going to rent it now. And it takes things actually off the market at this point. And so it goes a little different route than what people would really see, thinking there's going to be more tourists in town, more people buying. Doesn't necessarily work that way.
In terms of when you say inventory is low, I mean, it seems like there's tons of stuff in Wasatch County.
No, not really a ton. It's there, and that's, you know, it still takes a while to get that person coming in to ski to think about Wasatch County. So we're still, you know, see that differential in that respect. And it's mostly, as I look at our in-town stuff, you know, everything, Park City, Snyderville, out into the Jordanelle, those numbers are the numbers that we really see impacted that have that capability to rent during the winter that brings those products off the market.
Yeah, well, since we've talked last, of course, the sale of the Mayflower Mountain parcel, that north parcel had actually sold, I guess, several weeks ago. So in terms of that, I mean, what's the opportunity there?
You know, it's still a little wait and see. I mean, obviously there's a lot that's going to be built out there, and when it comes, it will, I think, change a lot of the way our town works. You know, if you see an actual viable base area at Deer Valley on that side of things, it will change traffic, and it will change a lot of what goes on. But it's still a ways out. You know, people need to see and feel and at least see some boards flying in the air before they're willing to jump into something that way.
Yeah, so it looks like Silver Creek Village is probably the next big
The next big piece coming at us. And it's, you know, still had its delays along the way. It's been a long time coming also. And if that's, you know, an indication of what we'll see when the Jordanelle comes along, it'll take a little time. So,
yeah, what are you seeing out at Park City Heights? Anything?
You know, we've seen four sales across the board on market rate stuff. They've all been a little over $1 million. So it hasn't come in real fast. And if you talk to their builders out there, it was a 10-year project to start with. So these things don't just come in and have thousands of units overnight.
Let's turn the conversation to Russ Smith. He's with Real Advantage Title Insurance. And Russ, my understanding is that you process perhaps the first Bitcoin real estate transaction in Utah. Do we know that to be the case?
Correct. As far as we know, it was the first one in Utah, and I believe the third transaction in the United States, definitely the largest transaction. Previously to our transaction was a little over $3.5 million. The next biggest one was $1.6 million back in 2014 in California. So, you know, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin has evolved, and I think, you know, we could potentially see this in the future.
Well, you say it's evolved because I think a lot of us see it as the currency that's used in the black market or money laundering. Is that's changed?
You know, I don't know if it's changed. It's just been something that there was a website back in 2011, 12, 13 timeframe called Silk Road that you could potentially buy anything you wanted as far as drugs, and they accepted Bitcoin because it wasn't necessarily traceable to an individual. But that was a very, very small portion. That was just, I think, an assumption by most people. But it's really, you know, cryptocurrency is just something that I think people like because it's not controlled necessarily by the government. So I think you'll see a lot of millennials, younger people that like that.
Well, since it's not run through any bank or financial institution, then it's not federally insured. Is that a problem in real estate transactions?
Well, essentially, from our perspective, we cannot take Bitcoin or any type of currency that is not considered good funds in the state of Utah, which is very similar in all states. So what we essentially did is we became a merchant that we partnered with a company out of Atlanta to help us trade the Bitcoin. And we just took the Bitcoin into our merchant account. We changed it into U.S. currency, and then we put it into our trust account. So at that point, it just becomes a cash transaction. So it's no different than anybody else coming in. It's more the facilitation of changing $3.5 million in a very short period of time to be able to facilitate a purchase.
Yeah. So did you just, I mean, was the call to you first, or was this something you heard about and like, I'll do it? I mean, how did it come about?
We had a couple different real estate agents in town that had been looking at Bitcoin, had some people that were interested in purchasing with Bitcoin. And so I was asked to look into it initially by a guy named Roy Pohl with Engle & Volkers. And then from there, that transaction did not happen, but I had already spent the time to look into it. Another agent from High Country Properties, Bob Strew, contacted me, and ultimately that's who did the first transaction. He was the buyer's agent. And so it took us about a month to get everything worked through. But then once we did the transaction, it was just a few days from when we took the cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and turned it into cash and closed the transaction, I think was 4 days. So it was very quick.
So when the buyer came in to close, he had a cashier's check with them then?
No, it was put in. They sent the Bitcoin to our account, our merchant account. We changed it into U.S. currency. From there, it goes into the trust account. So we held the funds until we closed.
Right. So since it's not real money, right, state of Utah doesn't see it as real currency, then how is something like this legal?
Well, again, it is currency. It's just not considered good funds in the state of Utah. So it's much like a stock. If you had a stock that you wanted to trade in for cash, you can turn it into cash. However, even though the stock clearly has a real value, we can't take it into our trust account. So the state of Utah wouldn't say, well, we'll take the stock for legal trade. So it would have to be changed to currency prior to the closing of the property.
Right. And so as stock goes up and down, right, with
Correct.
Just the market conditions, what would have happened then if conditions have changed? I mean, then wouldn't you still have the $3.5 million?
Well, that's why we had to do it very quickly. So when we took the money in, we knew what the current price was, and we knew that it had to be changed within a short period of time because of the volatility of the market. We were able to change all, you know, $3.5 million+ in less than 24 hours. And in fact, the cryptocurrency went up slightly. So the week before, this person was under contract on a $2.5 million house. And because the Bitcoin went up from 4,200 to 5,800, he was able to purchase a larger home. So $3.5+ million. And so it was very a very quick moving transaction.
Yeah. So why did the buyer want to use Bitcoin?
You know, it's just something that he had been investing in or the family had been investing in for some time. And they did not want to change it out until the very last minute. But obviously they had probably bought in very early. And so he just wanted to keep it in his Bitcoin account or wallet, so to speak, right up until closing, rather than changing it and then taking months to find the right property. He wanted to find the right property first. In fact, both sellers did not even know it was a Bitcoin transaction until after the fact.
Wow. So, I mean, when you say he got in early to the Bitcoin market, I mean, that makes it sound, again, like one of the things Utah's most famous for, those, you know, pyramid schemes. That's the word I'm trying to think. I mean, is that what Bitcoin is?
You know, I think some people may look at Bitcoin like that. In fact, that's initially what I looked at it as. But as I've researched it, it's really more like a stock that is only governed by the number of buys and sells. It's really not, you know, one of the main reasons we saw the volatility a few weeks ago is because It did not split. It did not fork is what I think they used the term. And so because of that, it went up slightly, went back down, but now it's back up again. I think it's about $9,600 right now. And even during this transaction, I think 3 or 4 weeks ago, it was at 58. So it's gone up significantly in that period of time. So a year and 3 months ago, it was at $700. Today, it's at $9,600.
Yeah, so you think this is the future?
You know, I think we'll see it around for a while. I think potentially there's other types of cryptocurrency. So I do think that it will continue to be around. I don't know what it's going to look like. Typically, when it gets big enough, you know, the government's going to get more involved, and that could change everything about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. So we'll have to wait and see what ultimately happens.
Fascinating. Okay. Anything else that you learned from it that you want to share?
You know, really, no. It's just very interesting to watch, and I really don't understand it, quite frankly, to the degree that I would want to understand it if I were to invest.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, Ross and Tom, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:54. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the annual Silly Holiday Bazaar returns this weekend in the studio to tell me about it. I have one of the organizers of Silly Sunday, Kate McChesney. Good morning.
Good morning.
I guess
how
I should
you?
Say you're the executive director of Silly Sunday, but
also all these big nonprofit titles. I appreciate it. Thank you.
So the Holiday Bazaar, when and where?
So it's going to be this coming weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, December 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, and it'll be at the Marriott on Sidewinder.
Okay. Have you been there before?
We have. Yeah. This is our third year at the Marriott, so we've definitely found our location. Our vendors know it well. Our patrons know it well, so we're really excited.
All right. You use the conference rooms and things like that.
We use the whole hotel. Yeah. Anything that they give us that's open space that we can set something up, we will absolutely set it up. So, yeah, when you walk in the door, you'll see elves ringing bells. We have Santa all day on Saturday and Sunday, and that's totally free. So the kids will get their pictures taken for free on Saturday and Sunday. And those hours on Saturday and Sunday are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Sunday 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then Friday we will be open after the vendors all set up. That'll be a night show, so that's 5 to 9. No Santa that night because he had some prior engagements.
Okay. So how many vendors are you going to have?
Just shy of 90. So that's, I know, when I say we pack them in there, I mean we pack them in there. So everybody comes with an open mind. They're not necessarily 10 by 10 booths. It's really, hey, look at this corner. Do you think you could set up everything you have in this corner? Great. Awesome. Perfect. So it's everything from crafts to hats to soaps and lotions and potions and pottery. Everything is handmade or designed. No multi-level marketing, no direct sales. So it's everything that really makes this town and this community unique. That's what we really look for.
Yeah, so you see a lot of the vendors from the summer market as well as maybe the farmers market come in?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we'll have gourmet food. So when you're looking to make a gift basket for friends and family, this is an opportunity for some of the gourmet foods that are made here locally as well as some of the vendors from the market. And then we also have vendors that are more winter, right? So the hats and the gloves and the cool wool socks. So we've got a ton of that kind of stuff.
Okay. And again, just free for everybody to show up.
Free for everybody to show up. Great. Absolutely. Yes. We're very happy that we're still be able to provide these great free events.
Yeah. Food, beverages available or?
At the restaurant within mm-hmm. the Marriott, they do have an awesome bar and they do have a great lunch and breakfast and dinner. So that's one of the things that we encourage with going to the Marriott is we also want to showcase the Marriott. And obviously it's the home of Sundance's you know, it's the home of Sundance's where everybody checks in. But really, it's a beautiful hotel and a great venue.
Great. Also, your silly the Sunday markets, you have lots of entertainment. Any plan for that other than Santa?
Just your regular music that plays throughout the hotel. Otherwise, it gets really loud and the vendors want to be able to talk. We've had some opportunity for some carolers. But even when we attempted that, it just gets a little too loud. So, but the hotel does a really good job of just playing some nice music.
Okay. Anything else people should know?
Other than, you know, there's going to be great free parking. Take the bus if you can. This weekend's going to be a beautiful weekend, so you can either, you know, walk and bike or hike over, take the bus. Free parking, free to get in, free photos with Santa on Saturday and Sunday, and just an all-around great time.
Okay. Hey,
Thank
Kate.
You.
Thanks for coming
oh,
in.
Oh, so nice, Leslie. Thank you.
It's Kate.